Okay, first I'd like to salute Bill, and I first knew about, I learned about the existence of Bill at McGill when I was a graduate student, when he invited me to Montreal to give a seminar. And then my advisor said, yes, you have to accept. So I went, and in his invitation, he mentioned possibilities of collaboration. But between the letter and my going, he had decided to move and leave for Guelph. So if I were paranoid, I would interpret this as me having chased Bill from McGill. But I'm not paranoid, so we have enjoyed on-off meetings for the last 21 years, and it has been enjoyable every time. So I wonder if we are celebrating your birthday or your retirement. Okay. What I'd like to present to you are some examples of collaboration of a collaboration I've started developing with people in our School of Pharmacy at the University of Montreal. And really, the emphasis on what I present is the interface between the modeling and the mathematics and the problems that what I would call mainstream pharmacists encounter. So this is work done by a postdoc who's now at the Centre de Recherche, Luciano Buono, a graduate student, Vincent Lemaire, who graduated last summer. And the last part of my work will be following work done by initiated by Ronald Siegel, who's now at the University of Minnesota. And the motivation is trying to better represent and incorporate more sophisticated problems than the regular drug administration paradigm calls for. In fact, most drug administration is based around the concept of flatter is better, meaning that they try to administer drug concentration within a therapeutic range defined by the interval between the minimum effective concentration and a toxic level. So very often this is the target of most drug design. The problem with that is that in practice, when the frequency of dosing is not constant, then you get peaks and troughs in the administration, and you also get actual modifications of the toxic level and the minimum effectiveness through fatigue, so that the target concentration sometimes ends up being at or below the maximum effective concentration. So there's a need for more sophisticated administration mode than just looking for constant concentration. And there's also some examples where the effectiveness of these irregular administration protocols are more efficient than a constant administration for a given dose. And I'll give examples of those shortly. So really what I'll be talking about are problems involving pharmacokinetics and really trying to describe the drug concentration in plasma. The ultimate goal of all of this is really to try to influence and get rid, in fact, of pathophysiological conditions. And the intermediate between the kinetics and the physiology is through the pharmacodynamics. And I will not be involved in that. So it's mainly a description as a function of time of the plasma concentration. So non-constant administration are used to control diabetes. And in fact, in normal regulation of insulin, glucose input is followed by insulin response so that the glucose concentration in the blood goes down. So this is an intrinsic mechanism in normal people which is tried to be reproduced for diabetes patient. That's why they have to know when they eat and what they eat. And variations in concentration are also needed to take into account normal oscillations, for example, in hormone system, other ultradian or circadian oscillations. And in some systems, like in gonadotropin hormone, releasing hormone, if you compare the continuous and the pulsatile regimen of administration for similar doses, you get a better result by having pulsatile effect. For example, in amarias, you can cure by having this pulsatile regimen, and it never happens with the continuous case. So in these instances, you need to be able to understand the mechanism of this non-constant administration. So in trying to develop collaborations with real pharmacokinetics, we went and talked to pharmacokinetics who work with an anesthesiologist, and they were trying to extend their regular models of pharmacokinetics to incorporate rapid action drugs effect. And the problem there is that the usual paradigm of compartmental modeling does not hold because of the rapid action of the drugs. So those are muscular relaxants used to help intubation for anesthetics patients in the operating room. And they want very fast action. And of course, the very fast action prevents the homogeneity of the compartmental models to take effect. And the kind of data we have to deal with. Absorb too fast? No, this. They wanted to act very fast. What do you mean? It's too fast for the usual compartmental models to hold, because those assume homogeneity of the compartments that they describe, and for that the rule of thumb is 4 to 5 minutes for the concentration of drugs to be constant in plasma and the organs and the target receptors. And for these, when you look at concentration as a function of time, you see 40 to 60% of the effect in the first 2 minutes. So in that sense, after 2 minutes, you have a significant influence. Okay? So in that sense, that it's fast acting. From a desirable point of view, you cannot say it's too fast, because they really want it to be fast, because they want the relaxant to be effective so they can do the intubation, because then that's when they then administer the anesthesia. Okay? So they really want fast acting. Okay, so these are the kind of pictures they have. And looking at data points for these two classes of drugs, this is a logarithmic scale. So actually, you have this challenging problem of developing a model with 5 or 10 second interval of sampling and understand the bulk in the first 1 to 2 minutes. So as I said, the problem is really to use something that can be useful in the first few minutes. Of course, this is not the first time compartmental analysis is questioned. This goes back to 1981. Where diffusion is mentioned as a way to, as an alternative to compartmental analysis. of course, the hypotheses were then recognized as not entirely being taken into account in modeling. So in tune with the space component of this workshop, our model is really also connected with the talk before the previous one. Our model is a ring, so the circulatory system is represented as a ring. The injection site is where the agent is injected, and the sampling site is where it is recorded. And of course, you'll notice that the injection is in the vein and the sampling is in the artery. So the model is a simple diffusion equation along a ring with boundary conditions because it's on the ring. We do the solution at the sampling site. And the key element, so this is the Fourier analysis, Fourier expansion. The key element is how to reconcile that with the traditional kineticist approach. So we were faced with the challenge of connecting this to the usual way of looking at drug concentration curves. And for them, a drug concentration curve has to be a sum of exponentials. I was at a PhD thesis defense 2 weeks ago, someone doing a pharmacokinetic study, and she basically did experiments and clinical work on sum of two exponentials. So it's really central to their paradigm, and it's something you have to deal with. So basically, our way of handling it was to add an elimination term to the diffusion equation, and this elimination term we picked as in such a way that the solution we would obtain would be could be interpreted as following two time scales. The first few minutes would be dominated by the solution to the diffusion equation, and then after transients, where this would disappear and converge to one, we would have the sum of the two exponentials taking over. So this is like adding the two compartmental modeling to the diffusion equation on a ring by a proper choice of a decay term. So the time scales are appropriate, and this will allow us, and did allow us, to make a conversation with the standard techniques. Of course, we have to do some parameter estimation, and we can reconstruct some of the data and fit it to the curves we have. And the interesting thing was, because of the oscillatory nature of the Fourier series, we can explain, or at least get a possible explanation for the non-monotone portion of the decay curve, like this blend here. Okay, so this can be interpreted as coming from the Fourier expansion, coming from the PDE. And it's associated with recirculation. So in fact, there can be a physiological interpretation for these oscillations because they take place in the first few minutes. It's the time for the blood to go through the whole circulation. Okay, so this was one case. And in the other example, the one that is mentioned in the abstract, it's a completely different system. In this case, we were interested in a device introduced by Siegel to administer physiological to administer a periodic concentration of drug in an autonomous fashion. So he was trying to design an autonomous implantable device that would be able to generate periodic doses of hormones or drugs. And the basic system driving the oscillation was a semi-permeable membrane made of a polymer, which would have swollen and collapsed states, and these states would be switched on by ions, and they would change the permeability of the membrane. So the permeability would depend in this way on what's inside the chamber, and this permeability would have two states. It would not be constant, and there would be a hysteretic effect, and this hysteretic effect can be attributed to a finite relaxation time of the permeability on the product and substrate concentration. So really the finite and non-instantaneous reaction time of the membrane is what's driving the system and introducing dynamics into it. So one representation of this hysteresis was to use a piecewise constant permeability, and in this way you can generate a piecewise ordinary differential equation, and you can do a fairly detailed analytical pasting of different pieces of solution and show that you can indeed generate oscillations. And so use the system again. So what Siegel did is he tried to look at different hypotheses on representation of the membrane permeability as a function of the concentration. So first, when he looked at constant permeability, of course, he didn't get any oscillations. Now, to put the finite relaxation time, so it's really a time delay, what he did is introduce the first order lag by having a differential equation satisfied by this permeability constant function. So in effect, this was really a time delayed term as a function, since the permeability was depending on a product. He was introducing, in effect, or dynamically, a time lag. And in fact, if you do that, so we did simulation, and you can observe a hub bifurcation, and it does depend on the delay. And in fact, we can reproduce by the explicit use of a time delay term the same hub bifurcation. So we wanted to look at a slightly more sophisticated representation, and the main difference we introduced was to put a permeability of the membrane that would depend on both substrate and product. So if we go back to the original equation, he assumed that the membrane permeability as a function of product was constant, and this is what we're changing. We're assuming that the permeability to both substrate and product will be a function of the product sometime in the past. And instead of having a sink outside the chamber, we assume that the product concentration is held at a constant value, which is more physiological depending on the application. So we end up with a system of two delayed differential equations, one for the substrate, the other for the product. And this is the one we want to analyze. So it can be made non-dimensional. And the first thing we have to do is look at the equilibrium, try to determine its stability. One thing to notice is that when we linearize in this fashion, we get a relatively complicated dependence on the those permeability function, and I'll come back to that in a few minutes. So we do for this delay equation what's normal for ordinary equations. We try to determine the loss of stability. In this case, the characteristic equation is exponential and polynomial, and here the coefficients, of course, will depend upon those functions we obtain in the linear equation. Now, the stability of that equation is sort of completely determined by results of Cook and Grossman. Sort of means they have explicit results in terms of the coefficient in the equation, the A, B, C, and D. But what we're really interested in are relating those coefficients to the functions, and because these functions will be determined by the chemical properties of the membrane, and we'd like to relate these stability conditions to the explicit properties of the gel that's used as a membrane. So the most important things from a dynamical point of view is that depending on the parameter values, and those can be relatively explicitly determined, there's either only one change of stability as the time delay is increased, or possibility of multiple changes of stability, what's often called stability switches. And as I'm sure Suan showed yesterday, you can find explicitly the locus of Hopf bifurcations by rather involved algebraic manipulations, looking at the second order polynomial with exponential terms. You get separating real and imaginary parts, trigonometric functions. You can isolate the frequency as a function of the other parameters, substitute back, and basically determine the critical value of the time delays as a function of the other coefficients. And that's where you get a clearer picture of the stability regions, because depending on upon the parameters, you get Hopf bifurcation curves which either will be non-intersecting. So we have here a region of stability, and stability is lost, of course, when you increase the time delay. And when it's increased further, you get further modes becoming unstable for some values. For other values, you have the more interesting case that I mentioned previously of stability switches possible. So you get, in this case, these parametric representation in tau and beta as a function of omega, and you get mode interaction at the intersection of these points. And these mode interaction, this is a Hopf interaction. And for these, you can do a center manifold expansion. You'd get a four-dimensional center manifold there. You get a system of four-dimensional ODEs. And you get interesting solutions. Those were generated numerically. So we are still in the process of trying to understand exactly how much interesting dynamics is possible at these intersection points. The crux of the difficulty comes from relating it to the polymer and those permeability functions. So that's the substrate and product as a function of time. And here's a pseudo-phase space representation. The intersection comes from the fact, of course, that we have a time-delayed system. For these, we can, in addition to the center manifold perturbation, do continuation that were mentioned previously. really what we're trying to do is adapt the mathematical representation to the physiological mechanisms. And the key word here is to reproduce what's happening naturally. And if the most natural representation has to be delayed differential equations, then they should be used. Otherwise, one should not be at all costs be looking for them. So this is really an ongoing project, and I'm going to stop here. Thank you.